Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Diofen Heskey.
Now, I think it's fair to say most of us hadn't really ever read an interview with Quique Setién before yesterday, but the new Barcelona manager sat down with Miguel Delaney about 18 months ago, had a fascinating chat with him, came across as a really interesting fella on a host of levels, and hey presto, he is now the new Barcelona manager, aged 61. So Miguel's going to join us later on the football show and give us his impressions of Setién, what he made of him, and how he thinks he'll get on at Barcelona. He is fourth choice, Setién, but seems to be a football romantic who likes to play the Barcelona way. That is all coming up after half nine or so. Should let you know, half times in the FA Cup third round replays are certainly only one of them is still half time. Spurs are 2-0 up at home to Middlesbrough. Lamela scored their second after 15 minutes. Lo Celso put Spurs 1-0 up after just 2 minutes, so they've been firmly in control from early on in that game. Elsewhere, Newcastle 3-0 up at home to Rochdale. We have Coventry 3-0 up at home to Bristol Rovers. We have Reading 1-0 up away to Blackpool, and it's nil all between Shrewsbury Town and Bristol City. Those games kicked off earlier, about 62, 63 minutes gone in those four games. And as I said, half-time between Spurs and Middlesbrough. Spurs are 2-0 up. In the meantime, we are joined by Arsenal and Republic of Ireland international Louise Quinn, who's hopefully on the line. You're there, Louise.
Hi, Joe. How's it going?
Great, yeah. Thanks a million for joining us. I know when the lads got onto you for a check-in, you said that we may be interrupting Love Island time. If that is the case, I apologise.
Yeah, it's paused for the moment, so I'll be able to do the ad, so it's all right.
Okay. I'm not so sure if I'm getting into the Cape Town version. I've been a committed fan thus far. I don't know if I have a winter one in me as well.
No, I know. It's tough watching, but I'll keep going. We'll see how it goes. Yeah, see. I haven't worn to any of them yet, to be honest.
Yeah, I've been hearing that. Well, we'll do a Love Island check-in at some stage if I haven't managed to watch it. So I was watching highlights of the on BBC of the win against Brighton at the weekend. So a 4-0 win. It looked very nice and comfortable. It leaves Arsenal sitting top of the WSL. We're 12 games in, 11 wins, one loss thus far. So 33 points. Man City in second are 3 points back. And then Chelsea are 4 points back, but Chelsea do have a game in hand. So it's still tight and it's still nip and tuck. But it looks like you guys have really kicked on from last season. 21 games, 19 wins, all competitions that is. 21 games, 19 wins. You've scored 77 goals. And actually in 21 games, 16 clean sheets. It looks like things are flying.
Yeah, things are going really well at the moment. I think we just have we're consistent and we're really taking control of games. And it kind of has only been the one game this season against Chelsea where they beat us, but where we actually, you know, we didn't play well. We didn't deserve to win the game. I think we had a first good 25 minutes, but our first good 30 minutes, and then it just started to, you know, to change in that way. But I just think the consistency, yeah, of winning games, the performances, the amount of goals scored, you know, the big players, again, like stepping up to the plate and performing. You know, Vivian Miedema is, you know, absolutely on fire, goal after goal. In one of the games as well, like it was a bit of a thrashing, 11-1, and I think it was 6 goals and 4 assists or something like that. So, you know, we've got everyone ticking over really nicely. So we're just gonna keep going that way.
I know you guys are at home to Reading tomorrow in the FA Cup, and then you have Chelsea at the weekend. So it's actually a crucial week. That's on Sunday afternoon at 2:00. So that's a massive game. Like 3 games in a week? I mean, not that you're getting old or anything, but 30 is coming up on the horizon. Is 3 games in a week no problem to you still?
Ah, yeah, sure. Look, we won't mention that, but I think I'm a late bloomer with the whole, you know, professional football thing starting a little bit later than others, so there's still plenty more in the tank. So listen, but it is, it's tough, it's not easy for anyone. It is a really, really short turnaround, but that's, you know, yeah, you've got to deal with it if you want to, you know, we want to stay in the cup, we want to be reaching the finals, winning cups, and then also being consistent in the league. So, you know, I think Joe has done a really great job in terms of, you know, rotating the squad. And we really did have, we had a lot of injuries last year and, you know, struggled in some of those ways. Whereas in now we've really had a pretty full and fit squad, you know, a few little niggles here and there. But, you know, we've been able to rotate and and use players, and then also the versatility of players as well has been crucial.
How's your own form been? How have you been enjoying the season from a personal point of view? How are you playing?
Well, I suppose from a personal point of view, I'm probably not playing as much as I'd like, to be honest. It's been a little bit tougher, but yeah, we have such a strong squad, and then, you know, certain players coming back from injury, and then, you know, I picked up a little niggle myself, and you know, it's been a little bit of a tougher year, but for the games that I've got in, you know, I'm performing in training, and I'm really enjoying my football. Obviously want to be on the pitch more, but you know, this is a year now where we're going into Champions League. As well as all, so there's been just a lot of football, probably more than, you know, than we've ever had, and the girls coming off the back of the World Cup as well. So, but yeah. So for me, it's just, you know, I'm training hard, played at the weekends, you know, we'll play again tomorrow, hopefully play on Sunday. So, you know, I'm just racking, you know, starting to rack up the minutes a lot more now.
Yeah, because I saw you playing Sunday. I hadn't realised you'd been in and out of the team as much. Have you been missing many of the games, half of them? What kind of numbers are you clocking up?
I've missed maybe not like, yeah, and it's just down to, you know, how Joe is picking the squad. So yeah, like a little bit less than half, but I've been involved in, you know, I think almost all the Champions League games, you know, a couple of the league games and a lot of the cup games. So I've still got, you know, a lot of minutes under my belt, but you just want to be playing. Yeah. You want to be playing all the time, no matter what. But you know, that is football. It is a squad game, and I think it's really shown this season for us that we really, really have needed the squad. And they've used this. I think even our, as you said, 16 clean sheets. But our goalkeepers, I think, have rotated in and out, both of them themselves. You know, it's been tough competition, but. Yeah, listen, I've been very lucky in my entire career to have played a lot of football. So, you know, it is different perspectives, and I'm learning a lot. And yeah, but you know, you just want to be on the pitch.
Yeah, of course. And I suppose that kind of competition can prove very healthy and keep you on your toes and keep you training really well. Or equally, if you let it, it can become a very stressful thing. It can become a negative thing. It can probably affect your confidence to some degree. You can get very self-conscious, and any mistake feels like it's magnified because, does this mean I'm out of the team? So have you had to almost consciously have a word with yourself about how you're managing the challenge of being in and out that little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And exactly. It is. It's another challenge that, I suppose, in a nice way, thankfully, I haven't had to face it that much, but I think it does. It puts a bit of everything into perspective of, you know, as well, I've also been very lucky to, you know, to play consistently in the Irish team, but it gives you that, you know, that different mindset of, you know, when there are players on the bench, you know, they actually just need that extra little pat on the back just to be like, you'll get there, you'll be on the pitch, you'll get your minutes, just keep working hard. And yeah, and of course, and there's days where I've been annoyed about maybe not playing as much, but I know that I'm training well. I know that, you know, still how I'm, you know, I'm 100% in every training session, and I know then that's going to, you know, push the other girls, and it's going to, you know, bring up the intensity of training sessions all the time. So yeah, listen, it's definitely another challenge, and you know, I'm enjoying the challenge of trying to break into the team as well. Yeah, so it is, it's mixed emotions sometimes, but you've got to take it. If you let it get on top of you, well then it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be any use for yourself or any use for the team.
Yeah, it just is the nature of a professional football environment. I mean, it's you need a bit of resilience to survive, as you know better than me. Champions League, you mentioned. So the quarterfinals beckon, Paris on the 25th of March, I think, is the first leg. Looking at the results in the group stages, I mean, you put 4 goals in Fiorentina one evening, Slavia Prague, 8 goals. It looked like it was a fairly comfortable Champions League experience, and it all went well thus far anyway.
Yeah, thus far, yeah. It was definitely... We got some, I suppose, yeah, more favourable draws. But I think the fact that, you know, Arsenal, we haven't been in the Champions League for, at that stage, I think it was 7 years. And, you know, I think that was, so it was a massive test for us to, you know, to test yourself against any other European team in terms of how you may sit up against them, or even about how much kind of video and information you can get on players. There's not as much you know about them. You know, yeah, and I suppose, the pressures that come along with the Champions League night. So yeah, so PSG, I think, is just going to be, yeah, it's going to be a huge challenge, and they're, you know, their season pros, you know, constantly reaching semi-finals and finals for them, really. And it is, it's hard to tell at this stage. We're in a good place. You know, I think, and they're doing obviously quite well in their league as well, but they're still, yeah, it's still going to be an interesting few weeks ahead, and I think just getting into March, we'll really be able to see kind of how things are falling. But we're feeling confident. We feel like that our momentum has just built and built and built. And, you know, in our preseason, we actually played kind of three of the, you know, the bigger teams in Europe, and we actually lost all the games. But it was, you know, we had new players, brand new squad early on in preseason, and you know, we feel we are in a far better place.
We're
a team that's really settled.
And I think Olympic Lyonnais might be lurking in the semi-final if you do make it through. They're going for their fifth Champions League in a row. Is that right? They're still very much the powerhouse of European football.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they, you know, they can, they bring in all the, you know, any player that they would, that they really desire, and you know, they have all the top players from the top international teams as well. So, yeah. So listen, that's another challenge that hopefully that we'll be able to face. And I think, you know, how we're playing, and we're really, I feel like we are really playing as you like to say, the Arsenal way. You know, of the old school Arsenal and the Invincibles, and you know, just really, you know, good and good looking football. And you know, I feel like Lyon, you know, may find that, you know, a different challenge for them to come up against someone like us. So
yeah, no doubt. Yeah,
you know, trying to have to get through PSG first, but you know, that would be, you know, for us, it's wanting to get as far as we can and that.
Interesting times actually at Arsenal at the moment. Are people standing up that bit straighter and going about their business that bit quicker with Mikel Arteta, new sheriff in town?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can. Everything's a bit more clean and tidy around the place now. But what a, you know, it's what a legend himself and, you know, Freddie taking over, and it's just, you know, it is just a common trend now. The, you know, the ex players coming in, but you can see, you know, I think already you can see a change in the team and the respect that they have for him. You know, being, because I feel like he was that, yeah, extremely hard working, that sort of captain that kind of just did it. He maybe wouldn't say so much, but he just did it. And you know, and then obviously being coached under Pep Guardiola, I think he's, you know, he's really flourished. And it's just about, yeah, he's just, it's trying to, he definitely needs to change a few things, and it's going to take that little while, but I think he is a good guy to have in that position.
Okay, be interesting to see how he gets on. I want to ask you about the Ireland picture as we head into 2020, but just one last one. I saw Nick Cushing, who's the Man City manager for what, the last 6-7 years, very successful, and he announced in recent times that he's going to be leaving Man City and going over to the MLS. I think he's going to be the New York City assistant manager. How commonplace is that? Like, that's he was obviously doing very well at Man City. How commonplace is that? Is that seen in any respects, Louise, as a blow to the league, that almost it's been used in certain quarters as some kind of vehicle for people to graduate to the men's game? Or, you know, is it fair enough, this is going to happen from time to time, no big deal?
Yeah, listen, I think, yeah, it's going to happen time to time. I think the commitment he's shown to Man City, exactly, is that he's been there for 7 years, won a lot of trophies, you know, built that team up to what they are. He's been there from the beginning. So for me, it's not looking at it like, obviously it's a great manager that, you know, that the league will be using. But, you know, I feel like he really has served time at City, you know, and he's done an excellent job, and you hear really good things about it. So I think the timing is a little bit awkward. To leave at the start of February is a bit strange. And I think that's it. As a coach, I think you need a new challenge. And for me, I think, you know, he's probably the most that I would find it hard to believe he's going to win maybe as many trophies, you know, with New York as much as he did with Man City. So you know, to me, it's just he's just taking another coaching opportunity and seeing how it goes. And you know, when knowing City, they're going to bring in you know, another excellent coach. So that's, you know, that's quite exciting as well. We were just chatting about it a little bit, trying to figure out, you know, if we had any ideas, but actually haven't heard a thing yet.
Right.
You know, I think they're keeping it quite, you know, yeah, quite down low. So yeah, for me, it's going to be exciting to see what they bring in and how that's going to change. I think City have had a certain way of playing their, you know, playing their football over the years. So it'll be interesting to see if that changes much.
Yeah. Before you go, the Irish picture, second in the group behind Germany. Germany 12 points, Ireland 7 points, Greece on 4, Montenegro, Ukraine no points. The most recent game was in November. That was the 1-1 draw away to Greece. It was really interesting watching on the TV when Vera Powell was interviewed after the game, you know, and she was, and it probably applies to the Ukraine game at home as well, the 3-2 win. And on the face of it, 1-1, not a terrible result away from home, but her real reaction to camera was one of disappointment. And she was just emphasising, this team needs to learn how to control games. It needs to dominate possession. When they go 1-0 up, it needs to kill games off and do that through possession. So it's not a million miles away, I suspect, to what you're learning at Arsenal or trying to implement at Arsenal. Is that very much the message she's been trying to give you behind the scenes as well?
Yeah, exactly. I think she's really trying to, yeah, like, not, you know, not only coach us in football, but yeah, like, you know, teach us how to play the game right. Mm. And she's simplifying things, it is just trying to, yeah, take control of the game, do things a little bit smarter, do it simpler. And yeah, listen, I think in the time that it happened, obviously that's frustrating. Mm. I think they started to put the pressure on us, you know, a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, so it was starting to show a little bit. Obviously it would have been a little bit easier if they scored maybe 10 minutes earlier, but when it's in the last couple of minutes, you know, that's extremely, extremely frustrating. But yeah, listen, when we've just got to learn from it, we still, you know, it's everything, and also learn her way, as well. But I think we have caught on to it quite quickly, and I think that showed in the Ukraine. You know, it's just about spending that bit more time together. But you know, it still leaves us in a similar position. You know, that we're still definitely fighting for that second spot, and it still is in our hands. Even, you know, obviously results against Germany, you want to keep that tight and definitely, you know, either grab, you know, a couple of points from them at least, and then just being consistent with the rest of our games. But it still really is in our hands. So yeah, there was frustration, but straight away, you know, I did really like Vera's, you know, reaction. It was like, we were disappointed, and she was like, what, like, why are you disappointed? Like, it's not over.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near being over. It's not nice, but this is football, and let's forget about it. We'll, you know, do our little bit of analysis on it, but then let's put it to bed. What's done is done, and we move on to the next one. And it's these next two games, then again, against Greece and Montenegro. Greece at home, Montenegro away.
Yeah, they're crucial.
Yeah, really, really crucial.
Yeah, the Greece game, by the way, for people who are looking for tickets or interested, that's going to be on March the 5th. And then the Montenegro game is away. That is 6 days later. And then you'll have Germany and then Ukraine in June and then Germany again in September. So March 5th and March 11th, the two big games coming up for the Republic of Ireland. You will also then have a Champions League quarterfinal straight after that. And in the meantime, you've got an FA Cup match tomorrow and you've got Chelsea at the weekend. So, you know, good luck with all that. Listen, thanks a mil for joining us. Appreciate it. Appreciate you giving us your time the night before a game as well, Louise. Thanks so much. Thanks a mil. Louise Quinn there, Arsenal and Republic of Ireland international as well. Talking to us, checking in how the season's going. It's going pretty well. By all accounts, Arsenal are flying. The latest, by the way, Spurs are 2-0 up at home to Middlesbrough, Lamela and Lo Celso with those goals. Newcastle still 3-0 up at home to Rochdale. Coventry 3-0 up at home to Bristol. Blackpool 0, Reading 1. And that is you for the FA Cup third round replays. Next up, we'll be talking to Miguel Delaney about the new Barcelona move.
Paddy Power and the Football Show. The greatest football partnership since Diouf and Heskey.
So we want to bring you news of developments at Barcelona. Quique Setién says he did not imagine in his wildest dreams ever becoming Barcelona manager. He is 61 years of age. Ernesto Valverde, as we know, relieved of his duties eventually last night. Setién has been given a contract to the end of the 2022 season. He said today, yesterday, I was walking around my hometown with cows around me. Now I'm here at Barcelona managing the best players in the world. So he's a very happy man. Miguel Delaney at the London Independent is there. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
You also a happy man, because it's rather convenient when you happen to have had a long sit-down interview with the new Barcelona manager. So that worked out quite well.
Yeah. And actually, I remember we did that interview in August 2018, just after the World Cup, when he was preparing for a friendly between his Betis team at the time and Bournemouth. And we didn't actually publish it until just before they played Barca in October, when he was kind of, he was mooted a bit at the time as a potential Barca manager, but was almost seen as a bit of a kind of a cult figure. And that was reflected in the responses. Whereas when I posted it last night, it just exploded, basically. Mm. Especially because the way he spoke as well. I think this is the interesting thing about him. Is just, it's his vision of football, which even speaking to him, you couldn't help but getting enthused by. As a person, I quite liked him after saying, found him really engaging to listen to. And from that perspective alone, I'm actually quite happy for him. But I'm also kind of excited for what he can do. I mean, that Betis team was great to watch. And I think Barca, after a few years when they've almost become Messi aside, just another super club, we could see something a bit different about them again.
Well, he seems in the face of it like a perfect fit, like very much out of the Cruyff school, and everything Pep Guardiola did, he would have been nodding along in complete agreement with. He said to you, I'm a romantic. I like the football. I'm a spectator. I don't buy a ticket to watch a team stay in their own half waiting for a nil-all or a counter-attack. And he even said as well, before I signed for Betis, I asked them, why do you want me? You've seen how my team's played, how I play. Are you clear this is what you want? Because he is not a man who's going to renege on his principles. He wants beautiful, flowing, passing football.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, to be fair as well, I mean, in interviews like that, when they get right into the technical stuff, you can only put so much in, because it just was the nature and the way these things are put together. But these weren't just empty words. He started to talk about how he would do that, how he'd build, and talk about how the importance of players feeling the ball at the feet. And like one of the more interesting themes of the interview was, and I kind of even think I was even thinking of in relation to Ireland, I suppose it's something that Stephen Kenny has touched on as well. Mm. But when can you really play expansive football like that, or a certain kind of principle of football, with what we perceive as limited players? And I think it's the line I opened the interview with, and he said, no, that's absolutely false. Basically, you can play this approach with any level of players. It's about, you know, implementing the system and having faith in it, and also to agree, trusting players. I mean, it's quite an optimistic school of football, I would say, and that the game should be about, really.
He made an interesting point as well, where he said to you, if a team defends and tries to, well, let's go for the Mourinho first half against Liverpool, for instance. If a team sits back and defends and tries to wait for a mistake and nick a goal, which really is the Irish way as well for so many years, he said nobody ever really questions the rationale of that. It is this perverse thing that when a team tried to play, so often a coach, you think of Guardiola, I think you reference it in your piece even, Guardiola in his initial stages at Man City is having to fend off questions about why he's playing such attractive football, frankly.
Yeah, completely, yeah. And also because at that point, it was being repeatedly exposed, and this is always the danger, that sort of, that when it goes wrong, it can look very bad. But I suppose the point is always that, and I think this is the point when Setién was talking, and like Guardiola was talking to himself, you've got to be brave enough to overlook when it goes wrong, that you've got to trust in the long term, because it's not about getting it right for one game, as kind of Mourinho's approach on Saturday was. It's about building something for the long term that is much more successful over the long term. And I think you have to say, given the recent tectonics of modern football, this is what has won. This is the dominant theme. And there's even, I think it's something actually, I did a piece last week discussing kind of Bielsa against Arteta, but there's even a wider argument that whole school of defensive football, of more reactive, restrictive football, has actually been beaten in the last decade.
Yeah, it was quite interesting in the piece that even his comments from, what, 18 months ago have aged very well. You know, that debate was raging even a bit more then. So his playing career, for people not overly familiar with him, he was at Racing Santander. Across two stints, he had 350 appearances for them. He was in Spain's 86 World Cup squad, didn't feature off the bench at all, but he was in the squad, a brief stint at Atletico Madrid as well. He's 61 years of age, so this is a relatively late period in his career to get a high-profile gig. People might wonder where he's been for the last 20 years or so.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I mentioned the piece as well. There's a comparison with Maurizio Sarri, really, in that someone that belatedly came into it. And I think it's just one of those odd cases of someone who kind of, it took a while to maybe find their feet or find the kind of the recognition for what they were trying to do. I think some of that is connected to some of the clubs he was with and some of the teams. He managed Equatorial Guinea. And I think there's definitely an argument here. There is a certain risk on Guardiola's behalf, because this isn't the CV of someone who takes over a super club that, you know, especially without a single trophy on it. But then the same was said, I suppose, about Sarri before Chelsea, and now he's got the Juventus job. And it was whatever the debate about Sarri and the dissatisfaction of Chelsea fans last season, if you stand back, he certainly succeeded. He got them into the Champions League and won a trophy. And I think there's a wider point here that Barcelona first kind of articulated or defined, which was, yeah, okay, the CV doesn't suit a super club, but when you're a club like Barcelona, so attached to a certain identity, it matters more that your coach fits to that identity rather than actually what he's done in his career. So again, and Barca themselves made this decision in the most famous example in 2008, where it came down to a straight choice between Mourinho and Guardiola, and Soriano and Bigurasain have all spoken about this. They could have gone with the easy option of Mourinho given that CV, but no, Guardiola just fitted the way they play. And I think that's happening across the board now. It's not just Barcelona. It's that so many of the big clubs are realising as important as a certain guarantee of success is actually a manager who's able to instill or perpetuate a proper identity. That's why Sarri's at Juventus, and that is why Barca have now gone for Setien. And it does pose questions for clubs like Manchester United and Arsenal and the bigger English clubs as well.
No, absolutely. And he's been on the Barcelona radar for some time, we should say, if this seems a little bit inexplicable. There was a famous 4-3 win, again, you reference it in your piece in the London Independent. And as well as that, 442 had a piece about him, and they were saying on one Real Betis visit to Barcelona, and there's almost something like Xavi-esque patronising about this, but Sergio Busquets, during one of the visits to the Nou Camp, gave him a Barcelona jersey and it was signed and it said, "For Quique, with love and admiration for your way of looking at football, all the best." So they've been aware of him and they've thought all along, he's one of us.
Yeah, he's one of those kind of figures widely admired within Spanish football. I'm trying to think of a kind of a Premier League equivalent that way. Someone that's just maybe hasn't, I mean, to a certain, there's a certain degree of Bielsa about it as well. Just widely respected without the resounding success, but more seen for kind of the influence had and the way he sees the game. He was always mooted as a potential Barca signing. And it's interesting, just I was reading back in that interview last night, so much of it does actually seem a pitch for the job, but in the way he was talking, it genuinely wasn't political in that way. It was just him honestly speaking about football, which is again why Barca feel that he's the right choice and can kind of restore some of their identity. And I think it's certainly, I mean, it did look at the weekend as if they were going to go for Xavi, which I think would have been madness to a certain degree. And people will talk about how Xavi, you know, he almost personifies the Barca way of playing and all that. And yeah, that's true. But as a player, as a coach, we don't really have much evidence of that yet. And I think there's a danger with that. And I think Manchester United actually particularly proved this. Especially, what is it, the number of managers, I think they're in their 30s now in terms of the quantity of them, that have played for Ferguson. And pretty much all of them, when you listen to them in interviews, they're very good at paying lip service to the Ferguson way. But if it's been proven that in their managerial careers that it's a bit superficial, as if they don't understand it on a deeper level. That's certainly happened with Solskjaer, I think. It's happened with Giggs. And I think it looks like it's a possibility with Xavi, given even how people talk about his career in Qatar. Whereas with Setien, he talks about all this, talks about it on a much deeper level, and has also obviously proven it with actual application in the league that Barcelona play in.
Yeah, well, I was going to touch on Xavi with you in a few moments, but seeing as you brought him up, the word is he seems to have turned down the offer and felt he wasn't quite ready. He's forging a very curious post-playing career for himself. Like, he's now into year, what, going on six in Qatar? I mean, Look, we all like money and all that, but this is a strange way to go about trying to make yourself the anointed one.
It's very bizarre, and it's actually... I was, when it looked like he could get the job, I was thinking of a piece on this and Xavi as a figure. Because I think you're right, he's a curious character in that way. And remember, about a year after Spain won the World Cup, there was a brilliant documentary that was brought out in Spain on Spanish TV, done by Michael Robinson, former Irish international, of course, who became famous there. But, you know, they had exclusive access to all the Spanish 2010 squad. And right at the end of it, when they're talking about victory and what it means, and most of the players are actually quite endearing in a very human way, talking about it. And then Xavi comes out with all this sanctimony about how we didn't just do this for Spain, we did it for football and the right way of playing. And it's really curious to be, you know, morally sanctimonious about football when then, on the other hand, you're willing to basically eschew a coaching career by essentially taking the quickest and most questionable money from a state like Qatar, given all the questions about how football there is associated to the way the state is run and the very various questions about human rights abuses, what is ostensibly slave labour, how construction is conducted there. And because, as an extension of all that, by virtue of being in a role like that and being so high profile in a country like Qatar, he's allowed himself to become a spokesman as well. And I think that's something that deserves huge questioning for someone that is so moralistic about the way to play football, which is comparatively irrelevant next to issues like this.
Yeah, and even if you gave him a ginormous free pass and said, well, maybe he's not the most politically aware fellow, the almost purity which he talked about football and the highest form of football, I mean, that's not in Qatar. I mean, if he was that dedicated to that aspect of the game, he would be doing what Mikel Arteta has done for the last number of years, whatever, but not doing what he's doing. So that was kind of strange.
Yeah, and even beyond that, I was talking to an Irish guy who's worked a lot, that's worked a lot in Qatari football over the past years.
Yeah.
And he was saying that actually he hasn't even been that good out there, that relative to the standard of his team, the resource they have and some of the players they have, he's actually underperformed a bit, that there's clubs with him that shouldn't be up there at the same level. I mean, and the comparison has been made of Pep Guardiola and how Barcelona kind of plucked Guardiola out of nowhere with no experience either. But that's not really true, because, all right, Guardiola, there can be as many questions about his own choice of job and going to Man City given their owners, although it's not quite as direct as living in a country like Qatar. But also, he didn't immediately go to a country like Qatar or Abu Dhabi when he was starting his coaching. He actually went and ascended what was ostensibly a world tour to try and kind of deepen his coaching education. He then went back within Barcelona and wildly succeeded with the Barcelona B team. So, like, the comparisons between Xavi and Pep Guardiola as coaches, I think, are extremely superficial. And it's the sort of thing that can be dangerous to get sucked into in that way.
Yeah.
And it's why I think Setien is just, on so many levels, just a much better choice.
You mentioned his piece almost in some respects conveniently read like a perfect application for the Barcelona job. I mean, none more so than what he has to say about Messi. You know, Messi comes up just because he's Messi and you're curious for his thoughts on this player who's dominated the global game for forever.
Just to get across,
yeah, go on.
The way that came up, I asked him whether, because this was August 2018, so Ronaldo had just gone to Juventus, and I asked him whether the question was actually about whether we were about to see a change in a new era in Spanish football because they'd lost one of their two totems. And unprompted, he basically said he just doesn't see Ronaldo on Messi's level.
Sorry. No, nowhere close. I mean, he didn't have them in the... Like, what he said about Messi was... And again, like, I mean, if they were consulting Messi about whether or not he approved of the new manager, he just needed this paragraph and you know it would have got a nod of approval. Setien said of Messi, there's only one player I've known that has the ability to really decide games on his own and play wherever. That's Messi. When you have a footballer like that who can do it on his own, there's nothing to say. The other 10 are going to say, let him do what he wants. He's going to make us better. We'll win more matches. But there is only one. Everyone else has a role. Everyone else has to maintain the structure. He says, if you keep having a player who drifts outside the system, you have to remove him no matter how good he is. But if you can win games on your own, a la Messi, that's fine. So in terms of how he's going to handle Messi and Messi's Barcelona, he's going to handle it just the way Messi would like him to.
Yeah, completely. And I suppose, and that's all the more relevant given there are all sorts of undercurrents around the eternal storm of Barca that Messi essentially runs that dressing room, that decisions are made on Messi's behest, because he's such an important figure to the club that really have to keep him content. And it was a sense maybe that he was kind of tolerating Valverde, and that he got really irritated in the summer with how the Champions League campaign went, because ultimately with the primary motivation of his career now is essentially to win the Champions League again and claim the record in the competition that he feels he should have. It's what he wants above all else. I mean, I think, in regards to this and Messi's forces of influence, people might say it's kind of, you know, individualistic and a prima donnish, but I mean, maybe there's always a certain level of that. But ultimately, I think it is actually about the welfare of the team he's playing in and winning the top trophies, not anything individual. And the argument remains, a team built around Messi and allows Messi to do what he needs and wants to do, well, I mean, it's better than anything else in football. No. So it makes sense then to manage like Setien in that regard as well.
I'm really curious to see how he gets on, because if you look at the post-Pep era, so that's kind of, what are we going back to now? 2012, it's amazing how time flies. Excuse me. So, well, you'd leave Luis Enrique out of this, and, you know, a tragic end to his time at the club, obviously. But if you take Tito Villanova, if you take Martino, if you take Valverde, I mean, it's even noteworthy that I didn't start by saying, geez, Valverde sacked, why, or what's going on here? You know, overshadowed to an extent by Messi, by the club, really. Is Setien the type of character who, in, you know, 2-3 years' time when he gets sacked, that we won't really begin the conversation with, that he will feel like another pawn in this list of post-Pep managers?
Well, I think this is the big danger to the appointment. Not so much his CV or the lack of trophies, but more the adjustment to a club of this size. I mean, I don't think it's an exaggeration at all to say that Barca is by far the most idiosyncratic and neurotic club in the world. And because they basically got it right with their principle of play and the youth system over the last 20 years, which is essentially instilled by Cruyff, it's very easy to forget that this was a club whose almost entire history had been just punctuated by crisis after crisis after crisis. And even when things were going well, like with Cruyff, it wasn't too long until a massive crisis was around the corner. And we've seen that over the past few years. They found a degree of stability that was alien to their entire history. So dealing with that could be interesting, especially given, I don't want to say naivety on Setien's part, but someone who's talking about that quote we referenced at the start, but someone who goes from, you know, talking about looking at the cows in his village to now managing Barcelona in the space of a day. You would hope that he's not daunted by it, because there does seem a kind of a certain striking element about suddenly taking over a club of Barca. But having spoken to him, I think that's more just his affinity for what the club is rather than him being intimidated anyway. And I'd say that's the hope. And I do think he will be different to those car. I think, I mean, if you look at some of those managers, Villanova, obviously, I don't know what could have been really because of the tragedy of his early death and having to leave the job. Although he did continue the Pep way to a certain extent. Martino was always a little bit of a Van Gaal figure in that way, and I had some of the principles of this approach, but in a very kind of flat way.
Enrique, I should correct myself, by the way. Obviously, it was his Spanish tenure that came to a tragic end with his opposed to the Barcelona tenure. So, I mean, look, Enrique, he did all right. Like, he felt part of it, you know, in a way that Martino and Valverde never quite have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there was a little bit of outsider about it. And I think that's the feeling with Setien as well. It's not just that he plays their way of football, but he just gets what the club is. And I know that's a phrase that actually come up, but I shouldn't have said that, because that's come up so much lately in terms of in relation to figures like Solskjaer and Freddie Ljungberg. They just get the club.
It's in their DNA.
He gets the football, should I say. Not the club. He gets the football. And I think, to be fair, his football has stood out so much in Spain over the past years. He's been so admired for it that it will make Barcelona a bit different again. And I'm kind of excited for what they can do.
I think that's why we're actually, everybody's quite excited about this now, because Barcelona at their best in the Barcelona way is just an amazing thing to have, even on the European stage. It's, you know, them winning two La Ligas over the last 2 years doesn't quite cut it. So It's potentially very exciting. Before you go, just a quick word on, I'm curious to know what you made of Mourinho against Liverpool at the weekend, more so the first half, because there was just something, I hadn't realised this until this morning when I was reading through some of what he was saying in the press conference. And effectively, it was kind of being put to him about the second half being much better, and they seemed to try and put a bit more pressure on Liverpool further up the pitch. And one of the points he was making was that the players actually can't cope with this high-pressing game, and that physically he couldn't ask them to do it for 90 minutes. And I was thinking, I mean, one, that would be something you would absolutely associate with Pochettino and Spurs. Yeah. And secondly, the irony, given that Solskjaer turns up at Manchester United and makes exactly the same complaint about a Mourinho team.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, well, I mean, a lot of managers in this situation are self-serving, but I think Mourinho particularly, the one thing you have to remember about Mourinho is that almost at this point, not so much before 2010, but more so when he's begun to be questioned his career, it feels like almost every decision he takes, and sometimes almost every match, is as much a referendum and statement about himself and how he can be perceived as an attempt to try and win a football match. And I mean, I have a certain understanding for how we approach Saturday, given some of Spurs' squad issues and given how good Liverpool have been. But it still felt a little bit of a parody of Mourinho's performance, and as if that was all he could possibly imagine. And the thing of Mourinho as well, and especially since 2010, in that what he still remains very good at is convincing people that if he doesn't do it in this particular way, the danger is total humiliation. And that happened a lot at Manchester United. It happened at Chelsea as well and Real Madrid. And I think it is a mode of thinking that's, as we've been talking about for the last 15 minutes, it's out of sync with the modern game where there's a lot more expansion and imagination and adventure to it. And all the more so because I don't think that type of approach, this real backs to the wall spoiling, but I don't think it can work as much in the modern game anymore. This is a bigger debate, of course, because but I think a lot of it comes down to the fact that attacking football is now so prevalent, so dominant, and also that teams are actually so much fitter that if you try and just keep a team like Liverpool out for that long, they'll eventually just overwhelm you, which is what happened, but it happened by the 38 minute. And also, the other side to this is that Klopp has specifically prepared for teams defending against him in the way they did to team, to like the way Mourinho was done to with Inter, to say to Barcelona, the way teams did to the Spanish national team at that time, and it actually plays into their hands now. So that's it did just feel you can understand Mourinho doing it to a certain degree. It just felt a bit of a parody, and it points to kind of bigger questions about his time at Spurs. Because I remember when I went to his press conference the day he got the job, I was actually quite impressed by him and the way he spoke, and it was then it seems he gets how the game has changed, and he's realised the need for change himself. And yet, since he's been in the job, I've seen no evidence of that. It's actually been a little bit dispiriting. And it feels like that, you know, this is all he can imagine with these players. You might make the argument that the state of the squad, that this club needs drastic changes. But one of the initial arguments for getting rid of Pochettino was either change the players or change the manager. Yeah. But the manager is much cheaper to get rid of, so you get rid of him. Whereas now, if they have to do both for a manager who feels more behind the times, then it's all, what was the point?
Yeah, and the second half would surely have demonstrated to him that that was the better route. That's where they genuinely caused Liverpool some trouble, could easily have got something out of the game. And, it's, you know, you mentioned that Inter Milan team. I remember watching, I mean, if we put that maybe as peak Mourinho, like a peak achievement to do that with that team, you remember watching them then, and one, it felt slightly miraculous. But what was the subtle difference with how Liverpool in 2020 are able to, you know, see the picture and understand exactly what the opposition are doing and digest it very quickly and be comfortable with it. When Mourinho was doing it with Inter Milan in 2010, they felt in control of the game even when they didn't have the ball. Yeah. It was, yes, without possession, but it was still on their terms. Whereas if you fast forward now 8 years, the same setup, the same lack of possession,
exactly.
It's not on their terms. Liverpool are in complete control of the scenario. And that necessarily wasn't the case a decade ago.
Yeah, and the other side to that as well, don't forget, is actually everyone remembers the second leg, which was ultra-defensive. But the first leg, it was a counter-attacking performance, but a counter-attacking performance with real trust. And they were real cutthroat to Barca in that first leg when they won 3-1. And this feeds into the wider argument of Mourinho, that it's not just that he's slightly past his best, but maybe that he's lost some of his own adventure in that way. That, I mean, it's one of the big arguments here from a lot of people that worked with him, from that know him, that Madrid changed something in that way and maybe caused him to lose some of his nerve in that regard. And it certainly seems the way in the fact that these performances seem to become more and more parodic.
Yeah. Well, we'll watch what happens when he goes to Daniel Levy looking for 200 million over the next couple of weeks. Listen, Miguel, Quique Setién, it's on the London Independent website. Never before, this was the easiest, most read article of your life, my man.
And especially in contrast to when I first put it up in October last year, yeah. 2018.
No, finally, 2 years later. Listen, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Cheers, Joe. Thank you.
Paddy Power and the Football Show, the greatest football partnership since Geoff and Heskey.